Make sure it is well grounded, or we probably have developed some electrostatic charge in our travels. There was no greeting. I think he simply picked the top item off the jumbled pile of our thoughts and responded to it. Then we were given the opportunity to touch something from another galaxy for the first time. The feeling of touching the ship, which definitely sent a chill up my spine, is also very difficult to explain. I expected it to be hard and metallic, but to this day, I find it hard to believe the feeling I had touching something that was so smooth and exchanged no heat with my hand. It was neither warm nor cold, and was definitely smoother than glass or polished metal, which will stick to your hand. It was like trying to press one magnet against the same pull of another, like I was not really touching anything at all. The colors were somehow projected from inside it, or emanated from it, instead of reflecting as from a painted surface or a mirror. At that particular moment, the colors seemed to match the sky and even the clouds. The ship was made in such a way, or of such a material, that once it rose several hundred feet in the air, it looked just like the sky. We accomplished our next goal in short order when we found ourselves shaking the hand of one of the visitors. It was his actual hand, not through a glove like I had often seen them wear. The hand was everything at one time without rest. You will see us again before long. Leo used the term galaxy very loosely. Barry advised me. I got the impression that, in his mind, the term would apply to the planetary system of another star or perhaps to a different dimension or time as easily as to another star cluster beyond the Milky Way. He often called the visitors time travelers. 6. I did not ask them any more questions and we did not get into the spaceship, Leo continued. When we wanted to know something, it was clear we had to be able to ask the right questions before we could get any answers. He stood before us for a few seconds more with that gentle smile on his face, then turned and joined the others. I was now certain that they were far older than anyone we had ever met before, explained Leo. They had very old, wise eyes and bodies that appeared to be young and fit. I decided that they must have far better methods to protect their health and must live in a much better environment than we do. They glowed with perfect health. I also knew they deeply respected our Earth. This was why they didn't leave rubbish about, why their area was always clean. I was now firmly convinced that these travelers from the spaceship could definitely read our minds. They responded to the questions, thoughts, and desires in our minds, and in turn were able to place their own thoughts, intentions and beliefs in our minds without using words. When viewed close up, the craft appeared to be constructed of one single piece of material without individual component parts. The ramp and supports beneath the ship appeared to join to the main body of the ship with no visible seams. Another encounter occurred in the same valley, late in the day on September 19th. Again, the boys were not prevented from approaching the craft. I do not know why, but I had the impression that the force field was still there, that they tuned it somehow to allow us to pass through, Leo asserts. The craft did not reflect light like ordinary objects. Rather, it seemed to absorb the light around it and produce its own subtle light of any color or pattern of shades. Sounds did not echo off it like the wall of a barn or the face of a cliff. You could stand right next to it and not even notice it was there. It was more like a living thing that watched and reacted to its surroundings, than a machine or building. Maybe they were putting on a show for us, because the appearance of the ship began doing the most amazing things. One moment it would blend into the sunset, matching every color and pattern. Then it would go like oily water and abruptly change to a polished mirror or a dark, non-reflective surface like a hillside. It took many minutes for us to work our way to the clearing near the ship. At first, the boys did not notice anyone near the ship as they walked up to it, nor the silent lowering of the ramp. but they became aware of a man standing next to one of the huge legs that supported the ship. The man made eye contact with the boys and had started to speak before they suddenly realized there were two men. The one who had started to speak to us continued, turning to the other as he spoke, in flawless German. "These boys would like to touch our ship. Make sure it is well grounded, for we probably have developed some electrostatic charge in our travels." There was no greeting. I think he simply picked the top item off the jumbled pile of our thoughts and responded to it. Then we were given the opportunity to touch something from another galaxy for the first time. The feeling of touching the ship, which definitely sent a chill up my spine, is also very difficult to explain. I expected it to be hard and metallic, but to this day, I find it hard to believe the feeling I had touching something that was so smooth and exchanged no heat with my hand. It was neither warm nor cold, and was definitely smoother than glass or polished metal, which will stick to your hand. It was like trying to press one magnet against the same pull of another, like I was not really touching anything at all. The colors were somehow projected from inside it, or emanated from it, instead of reflecting as from a painted surface or a mirror. At that particular moment, the colors seemed to match the sky and even the clouds. The ship was made in such a way, or of such a material, that once it rose several hundred feet in the air, it looked just like the sky. We accomplished our next goal in short order when we found ourselves shaking the hand of one of the visitors. It was his actual hand, not through a glove like I had often seen him wear. The hand was everything at one time without rest. "You will see us again before long." Leo used the term galaxy very loosely. Barry advised me. I got the impression that, in his mind, the term would apply to the planetary system of another star or perhaps to a different dimension or time as easily as to another star cluster beyond the Milky Way. He often called the visitors time travelers. 6. I did not ask them any more questions and we did not get into the spaceship, Leo continued. When we wanted to know something, it was clear we had to be able to ask the right questions before we could get any answers. He stood before us for a few seconds more with that gentle smile on his face, then turned and joined the others. I was now certain that they were far older than anyone we had ever met before, explained Leo. They had very old, wise eyes and bodies that appeared to be young and fit. I decided that they must have far better methods to protect their health and must live in a much better environment than we do. They glowed with perfect health. I also knew they deeply respected our Earth. This was why they didn't leave rubbish about, why their area was always clean. I was now firmly convinced that these travelers from the spaceship could definitely read our minds. They responded to the questions, thoughts, and desires in our minds, and in turn were able to place their own thoughts, intentions and beliefs in our minds without using words. When viewed close up, the craft appeared to be constructed of one single piece of material without individual component parts. The ramp and supports beneath the ship appeared to join to the main body of the ship with no visible seams. Another encounter occurred in the same valley, late in the day on September 19th. Again, the boys were not prevented from approaching the craft. I do not know why, but I had the impression that the force field was still there, but they tuned it somehow to allow us to pass through, Leo asserts. The craft did not reflect light like ordinary objects, rather, it seemed to absorb the light around it and produce its own subtle light of any color or pattern of shades. Sounds did not echo off it like the wall of a barn or the face of a cliff. You could stand right next to it and not even notice it was there. It was more like a living thing that watched and reacted to its surroundings, than a machine or building. Maybe they were putting on a show for us, because the appearance of the ship began doing the most amazing things. One moment it would blend into the sunset, matching every color and pattern. Then it would go like oily water and abruptly change to a polished mirror or a dark, non-reflective surface like a hillside. It took many minutes for us to work our way to the clearing near the ship. At first, the boys did not notice anyone near the ship as they walked up to it, nor the silent lowering of the ramp. But they became aware of a man standing next to one of the huge legs that supported the ship. The man made eye contact with the boys and had started to speak before they suddenly realized there were two men. The one who had started to speak to us continued, turning to the other as he spoke, in flawless German. "These boys would like to touch our ship. Make sure it is well grounded, for we probably have developed some electrostatic charge in our travels." There was no greeting. I think he simply picked the top item off the jumbled pile of our thoughts and responded to it. Then we were given the opportunity to touch something from another galaxy for the first time. The feeling of touching the ship, which definitely sent a chill up my spine, is also very difficult to explain. I expected it to be hard and metallic, but to this day, I find it hard to believe the feeling I had touching something that was so smooth and exchanged no heat with my hand. It was neither warm nor cold, and was definitely smoother than glass or polished metal, which will stick to your hand. It was like trying to press one magnet against the same pull of another, like I was not really touching anything at all. The colors were somehow projected from inside it, or emanated from it, instead of reflecting as from a painted surface or a mirror. At that particular moment, the colors seemed to match the sky and even the clouds. The ship was made in such a way, or of such a material, that once it rose several hundred feet in the air, it looked just like the sky. We accomplished our next goal in short order when we found ourselves shaking the hand of one of the visitors. It was his actual hand, not through a glove like I had often seen them wear. The hand was warm, the grip firm. Although I was right in the middle of what was probably the biggest thrill I ever had, I found myself thinking, "Sure would like to get into that ship." "I think that can be arranged," came the reply to Leo's unspoken thought. "But first, you will have to go through a process to enter the ship. There is nothing to be afraid of, and you will have to go through the process again to leave the ship." The man explained that this process was controlled by what today might be termed an invisible energy beam or field of radiation, comparing it with the energy field that prevented approaching the ship. "I understood that it was a modified form of the invisible shield," said Leo. I finally began to recognize that they were giving us information in some way other than by just what they had told us, and that they were communicating with us, not so much by what they were saying and we were hearing, but more by what we are feeling. As Leo explained to me, they can open up areas of the brain that we don't use. And they made it clear that we have 12 senses, not 5.7. They seemed to realize that our world was in trouble, and understood about the depression and the drought as we talked about failed crops and the grasshoppers that were invading our country. They also gave us the indication that man would soon bring terrible wars and suffering upon himself. Inside the spaceship. Finally, the boys were invited aboard the spaceship. A huge ramp descended silently, and, almost before we knew it, we were escorted up the ramp by the man we had been speaking directly with and at last found ourselves entering the ship. There was an inner and an outer door. When one door opened, the other door closed. Some kind of mist would go across the door. We asked him what it was. He told us that it was a disinfectant, as we would call it. One moment there was a wall, the next it was an open door. I could see no hinges or handle, not even a joint where the door met. After we had entered the compartment and the door had closed behind us, our guide told us we had to remove our clothes so the disinfecting process would be effective. Mike and I were both a little nervous about taking off our clothes in front of these people, but felt a little better about it when we saw that we would get to wear some of their clothing. I was glad we had both taken baths the night before. I was looking around for light bulbs or fixtures or switches, but there was nothing on the walls or ceiling. There weren't any shadows, either. The light just seemed to come from everywhere at once. After we had dressed in their clothing, which opened at the back like one of those hospital gowns, we passed into another compartment which contained some kind of haze that went over our entire bodies. They had given us some light jackets to put on that, compared to any clothing we had ever seen, were just beautiful. They were made from a material of a very slick texture, and, when the edges of the fabric were brought together, they attached themselves without buttons. When the inner door eventually slid open, we came into what must have been their main compartment. The first thing I noticed was their chairs. They were wonderful, just out of this world. Our host invited us to sit in these great chairs, which were completely adjustable. Though the travelers were all so similar to each other, I am certain one size of chair would fit them all. Like the ship itself, they didn't seem to have any individual parts. A force of some kind made them move toward you when you were about to sit without anyone appearing to touch them, and Mike had a great time trying to outwit the chairs, to the great amusement of our friendly hosts. When I sat, the chair subtly and automatically adjusted to fit and support my body from my heels to my head. A screen measuring about 5 by 4 feet appeared, showing pictures of a place or process that the boys simply could not fathom. Opposite the screen were other types of machine, described as magnetic sensors. Their meals and the cooking thereof are impossible to explain, although they were very nice about trying to explain it to us. We saw what I would call sleeping compartments with unusual beds, but we asked no questions about their sleeping customs. The toilet facilities were fully automatic. Things like towels and toilet tissue were not there. It all seemed to be operating by the magnetic force, or maybe some chemical reaction. The largest room we saw was their laboratory or workshop. I saw many different things I could not even begin to grasp, though. I tried to ask some questions about these machines. The men replied that, no matter how they explained it, it would be impossible for the boys to understand any of it. "Why do you keep coming to our valley?" asked Mike. "We study the life patterns," came the simple reply. Although the inside of the craft couldn't be seen from outside, from the inside everything was visible. We could see clearly through to the outside and observe clouds in the darkening sky, Leo explained. We called it glass, but they informed us it was some other type of material which they did not explain to us. Also, images of real-time scenes could be projected from anywhere onto a screen, evidently imagery being fed in from their sensor systems. When I interviewed Leo at his home in Helena, Montana, in 2004, he revealed more. There's a screen on that panel that shows the entire world, like a map, but it's different, he said. As they travel, the information keeps changing. No buttons are used. It's done by brain waves, via the eyes, for example. 9. Another of their abilities that we experienced inside that spaceship is just as baffling, Leo reports in his book. I sat in one of those wonderful chairs watching the sun go down over the mountains outside and listening to one of our hosts trying to explain something about how far away their galaxy is. Next thing I knew, we are walking on the hillside and he was showing us how the grasshoppers lay their eggs under the dirt. Just like that. I blinked my eyes and there we were, back with the galaxy lecture. Blink again and he was showing us how the magnetic laser beam worked. They could also stop a bird in flight and hold it motionless in midair. Now I saw this done, but I am not sure how. they could catch a rabbit in his jump and stop him in midair, and they could hold these animals like this for minutes or hours. Then, suddenly, they could just release them. In other words, from the understanding we gained, they had the ability to stop any moving object at any range they desired. Our military men should take note. These people who we met and talked to in the year 1932 came right out and told us they had traveled to this planet for over 5,000 years. They will continue coming to this planet because it is their responsibility. It is important for us to understand that they said the Earth is their responsibility, rather than mankind's. We were told that they will continue traveling to our planet, to this very spot, and to many other places as our world gets deeper into trouble. One of the reasons for their great intelligence is their ability to use 12 senses. And they told us that 12 people from their galaxy live full-time on our planet Earth. These people live among us, but we cannot tell that they are different from us. We were also informed that these 12 people have often offered to help our world and were rejected every time. Leo related to me some amusing anecdotal information he acquired that year from a native Indian chief. "They come from the heavens," declared the chief. "They're white, and they dress funny. We got down on our knees to them. They taught us how to plant things. My granddad told me all these things, which he'd learned from his father. They came by season. Then, when the white men came, we originally mistook them for the people who had come from the heavens." 10. Further contacts. Further landings and contacts took place occasionally over the years. I saw the spaceship off and on after that first year, and even saw it land several times, wrote Leo. Mike was not present at these events. In 1933, I had the pleasure of seeing it landing about 2 miles south and a mile and a half east of Dunn Center, North Dakota. It continued landing at that location from 1933 to 1934. In August of 1936, about the end of the month, around 9:45 in the evening, I again saw their ship land at the location near Dunn Center and decided to walk up to them. As I approached the ship, I was allowed to enter through their magnetic forces. The ship didn't look any different from the ship I'd seen in 1932. I was welcomed by 3 people and was certain they were the same people I had met back in 1932, and I did not have to ask to enter their spaceship. They said the world would have many problems, but they would not interfere, and reaffirmed that this planet was their concern, that man has his own mind, and that he must learn to take care of his planet if he wants to keep his home. He assured me our planet would continue to exist, but I was not assured that man would continue to exist on it if he did not learn to take better care of his most valuable possession. In October 1936, Leo enrolled as a laborer with the Civilian Conservation Corps, CCC, a public work relief program for unemployed youth during the Great Depression, receiving an honorable discharge in March 1937.11. There were no further contacts until 1938, at Watford City, North Dakota, close to the Missouri River Bridge. Then, on the evening of September 15, 1939 at around 21:30, as he was en route to Watford City, a spaceship landed about 300 feet off the side road. 2 men, identical to those from the previous encounters, alighted and greeted Leo, expressing their pleasure at seeing him again. They added that he had changed a lot since 1932. Leo said he was bemused that they, on the contrary, had not changed at all. "We are several thousand years ahead of your time. We are germ-free and our life expectancy is quite different from yours. At this time, it would be impossible for us to explain to you how we have accomplished all this in our lives. But we can assure you, if your scientists would devote their time to increasing your lifespan, P, people on Earth would be capable of living in good health much longer than you do now. And you're looking very well. The Surprising Nature of Getting Old. Faber, 2010. Author Lewis Wolpert states his belief that one day human beings may have a lifespan of 600 years. Leo was puzzled to note that, although it was now about 10 o'clock at night, the area around the spaceship was not dark. Some type of glow kept shadowless light in the area, he observed. As Barry Potter pointed out succinctly to me, the alien light is always described as shadowless, which is directly contrary to our understanding of light as a radiant effect, that is proceeding in a straight line from source to a reflecting surface. 12. I concur. Additional evidence for this technology is provided later, particularly relating to the Amasisa saga. Asking if they were worried about people noticing the glow, Leo received an interesting reply. We have stopped all movement for 3 miles around us. There is no way that anything can move within that area. No person can approach the ship unless we allow them entrance. It will be some time, well in the future, before people will be able to understand and do much, if any, of what we are capable of doing now. This new understanding will make a tremendous change on your planet Earth. Leo was invited aboard, involving the same disinfection process and change of clothes as before. 6 men, seated in the main compartment, were watching an image on the large TV-like screen, which Leo learned was of their galaxy. Again, he marveled at the lack of any visible light fittings in the ship, and inquired how the light was generated. Our lighting system is in our metal, he was told. The power for our machines is also generated in our metal. This is all we can tell you, for it would be impossible for you to understand how our energy system works. By around 23:30, Leo felt it was time to leave. The first man put his hand on my shoulder. After hesitating for a moment, I put my hand on his shoulder. In turn, I did this with all 6 men. After I entered the outer compartment, I removed the jacket and handed it inside to them. The door closed and again the mist covered my entire body. As I finished dressing, the unusual door opened and I stepped out of the spaceship. Heading back to the car, Leo was astonished to find his way illuminated in some way by the same shadowless light all the way up to his car. In 1941, Leo was called to service with the U.S. Navy and eventually participated in the invasions of Okinawa and Iwo Jima. Most of this period was spent with the amphibious unit in the South Pacific, serving, for example, in the minesweeper USS Skirmish, AM-303. He also served in the USS Missouri, witnessing the surrender of Japan to General Douglas MacArthur on that ship. I surmise that he probably served with either the Office of Naval Intelligence or Office of Strategic Services, though he never confirmed as much, as he was involved, for example, with the occupation force in Japan, interrogating prisoners, and also served in Africa Comma 13 mostly related to counterintelligence. Following the war, Leo moved to Bozeman, Montana, working as a salesman, returning to Kildare in 1948. In 1950, he saw a spaceship landing in the high hills along the highway between Norris and Sappington Junction, some 30 miles from Bozeman. He planned his business trips so as to pass through that area regularly, in the evenings, and observed the craft on a number of occasions. Because the ship was usually well back from the highway in varied difficult terrain, he explained, I had no real chance to make a personal contact with them. Leo does not provide dates of these events, but it is worth noting here that on the late afternoon of April 12, 1950, in Helena, some 65 miles from the landing site described by Leo, a Mrs. Ida Welch reported an object that looked like 2 soup plates put together, larger than a bomber, flying so close to the ground that anyone could have shot it down with a rifle.